I'm Brian McCreath from WCRB. Very pleased to be joined by James Burton from his abode. And here I am in my abode as we are very socially distanced right now for the current conditions. But James, thank you for taking a little bit of this afternoon to talk with me. I appreciate
it. It's lovely to be with you, Brian, and to spend some time talking about the work that we're doing at the Symphony and the Chorus. And always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, let's talk about the work that the Symphony and the Chorus would be doing. Let's just start there. I hate to say it, but let's just for a moment pretend that that it's February 1st, because the last time we did a talk and an interview was when you first arrived a few years ago. And so while there are just completely unexpected circumstances going on, I'm interested in, previous to these circumstances, how you felt like things have gone over the last few years. What is it that your work has come to be in your few years here so far? What goals have you been able to accomplish? And what has surprised you about your work as the BSO Choral Director?
Well, there's been so many things that have kept me busy, and it's been a real voyage, and it's been such a pleasure to get to know everyone and to get to know the audiences in Boston and to see how much the symphony is held in esteem and in people's hearts. And when I say the symphony, I mean that with a sort of small s in terms of the love of music in this wonderful city and in the state, and to see the support for all of the musical organizations around town. And it's I've so enjoyed seeing performances of the H&H and the Lyric Opera, and seeing other colleagues thrive in this wonderful sort of ecosystem of music making. And of course, the symphony sits at the heart of it, which is lovely. And I love the building. Going into work at the symphony hall every day is, you know, you sort of have to pinch yourself sometimes when you walk into the hall and witness the acoustic once more. And it's well worth reminding everyone in this sort of funny time of Zoom acoustics that, you know, we have in our state and in our beloved city one of the great acoustics of the world. And we so look forward to filling it with music, both with, you know, our own musicians at the symphony, but of course all of the guest musicians who come through, touring orchestras, other resident artists, and other concert series which exist there. So it's just a real pleasure to have been part of that over the last 3 years, and to see that choral music has grown in the last couple of years. And, you know, there's been a couple of moments where we've been able to present the chorus in particular in ways which perhaps hadn't been attempted or perhaps given such a prominent platform before. For instance, the last day of Tanglewood last summer, as I'm sure so many people know, the Beethoven Ninth Symphony is the final notes which ring out across the lawn each summer. And it was my idea to see if we could give the orchestra a little bit of a moment to breathe, because they've played so many notes and concerts by then. So I thought, come on, the chorus can do something here. And so I asked and discussed with Tony Fogg the idea of doing Schoenberg's Frieda auf Erden, which is an extremely intense piece. It's extremely difficult for the chorus. But the theme of peace on earth seemed to be pertinent at that time, and it's still ringing down since August 2019. And to have the chorus stand by themselves on the Tanglewood stage and sing a cappella and to present this very, very difficult work was a real marker for us that we were just saying to our audience, it's not just the orchestra, it's the chorus too. And we've got things to say that are important artistically. So those moments have been total joy, a joy to me, and prelude concerts that we've given in Ozawa Hall as well. It's lovely just to have a little microcosm of music making in the smaller space, maybe to have fewer singers involved. But actually, last summer, we presented Frieda auf Erden with all of our singers to finish the Prelude concert at the end of a concert which was actually more of a chamber scale. So we went from being a slightly big chamber choir to a massive symphony chorus, which, of course, is something that the Tanglewood Festival Chorus is famous for. It's just to see, you know, rank upon rank of singers singing their hearts out, and that's something I love them for. And, of course, they are all desperate to get back as soon as possible. Over the last few years, obviously, those moments have been real highlights. And we had some wonderful concerts this season. We had just finished a run of concerts of Durufle's Requiem, which is such a beloved piece. I'm sure lots of musical enthusiasts who've ever done any singing might know about that piece or might even have done it. But in fact, the symphony hadn't performed it for a very long time. And it's so lyrical, it's so reflective and sort of mystical at moments. It's just so beautiful. And it was just a joy to have the chorus learn that music. And then also for us to have the opportunity to involve the children's choir in that performance. It's optional in the score. And of course, a few years ago, we wouldn't have had that option open to us. So perhaps we wouldn't have done it that way. But to have the children on stage with our more experienced singers is very powerful. And to hear their voices when they were singing the final phrase of the piece In Paradisum, you know, it really takes your breath away to hear these very young voices singing this beautiful concept, which, of course, we all aspire to. And it was very, very moving. So, I've so enjoyed putting the children's choir together and having them join our family of musical ensembles, and then have both choirs take part in these enormous concerts which we do in December. I don't know if you've heard about Holiday Pops, but it's this ever-present thought in the choral team's work is, how long is it until we start this wonderful run of, I think, something like 40 concerts in December, each one of which has a choir involved, none of whom are paid to be there. So we have to cajole our singers and keep their spirits high. And the children's choir are now doing the weekend matinee concerts, which have been a great success. And we're able to change the program a little bit and to give our adult singers the weekend mornings off, which is, I think, and I hope, appreciated. And then the adults take the main bulk of the work. But Keith and I have been crafting the program to involve the kids in particular. And that's been a great success. So I'm really pleased with that, and that it's fitted with the symphony's vision of having more singers involved and reaching different parts of the community as well. Because the children's choir, we've got about 80 or 90 singers who are currently involved. We've already got alumni singers. So we've got families that perhaps might not have been coming into the symphony very often. Now we've got the entire family coming in to see their kids take part in these wonderful concerts. And that's really nice. We seem to have sort of got a new community involved. And let's see over the next few years if we can spread that even further to include more sorts of singers and more families.
Well, when we talked upon your arrival at the BSO, that was maybe the thing that I remember the most clearly about that conversation, that you had this ambition to expand what it is that choral singing could be as part of the BSO family. So the BSO Children's Choir is maybe the most tangible evidence of that so far. And it's added a lot to the concerts.
That's right. And it made sense to make it a permanent group as well. And we've tried other ideas as well, including an open rehearsal, which we did back in January. And we had TFC members, said to them, do invite your friends who sing, perhaps in choirs that don't normally tackle this sort of repertoire. Bring them, let them sit on stage with us and let's make some music. And we had a really terrific afternoon. And I'd love to do more things like that, where with sort of singing with no strings attached. Obviously, joining a choir can be a big commitment. And certainly our Tanglewood Festival Chorus members are incredibly dedicated. I know they're also very busy in their working lives and family lives. And sometimes I'm left aghast. I'm like, how on earth are you here? Because I know you're meant to be somewhere else. And they're absolutely stoic in their the way they organize their lives in order to make music with the symphony. They're real sort of choral fanatics. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I know there are other singers out there as well. And I hope over time we'll be able to reach them. We had programmed a wonderful piece by Yuri Kane, which was about to be performed back in March. This piece is called The Passion of Octavius Cato, who was a 19th century political leader in Philadelphia who was assassinated during a mayoral election, African-American, and was actually an outstanding baseball player. And as I was very interested to learn, he also played cricket back when cricket was popular in New England and the north of America. Maybe cricket's day will come again.
We'll hope.
I hope so. But this story is very compelling. And we had put together, with help from colleagues who are leaders in the gospel choir community, a choir called the Cato Chorus, which was going to be a sort of crossbreed of singers from all over Boston singing communities, and including members of our the TFC and gospel choirs, and actually alumni of the children's choirs. So this choir had a different vibe to it, and I also deliberately wanted the leadership of it to be different as well. And I invited one particular person, David Coleman, who's a brilliant musician and I'm sure very well known for his leadership of gospel choirs. But I said, look, I would love you to come and help build this choir and help build this performance. And there was two rehearsals we did together. And just to have him with us, sat at the piano, he taught us some gospel songs to get us going in the style and to be unified in our voices and our musical approach. There was a completely new, different vibe in our chorus rehearsal room. And it was so galling to me that we couldn't share that in the symphony. And I really hope we'll be able to recreate that, not least because of what's happened in the country since then. And this piece is so wonderfully meaningful. And it sort of doesn't hold any punches either. I mean, it really hits you between in the ribs. So that's obviously a real departure for the symphony. And I think that's great. I was learning a lot. I think all my colleagues were learning a lot. And we want to have new faces and new ideas come into the building to help re-envisage what the symphony means and what it can be as we go forward in time. And that was just one small little example of that sort of thinking, then coming full circle and then being seen on and heard on stage.
Yeah, that is one of the of all the disappointments that we all have to contend with from the pandemic. That particular concert was one that I felt acutely as well, simply because the entire program was built around this kind of stretching out of what is possible, what the sounds are that we're going to try to deal with. And as you say, what could have been better timed in very unfortunate ways, of course, but given the upheaval in the country, that piece, when you can get back to it, and I believe you will, I firmly believe that a lot of the plans that many people have made will be picked up again. And that piece will have a resonance like it almost couldn't have had in March in the same way.
I totally agree, actually. I think when we come back to it, which I know we will, I'm sort of burning to get going with it, because I think we can. What we were going to do was going to be good and really interesting, but now I think what we will do will be like a express train, and I'm so excited about what could be possible. And I think that's for everybody, not just the performers. I think for the audience too. And that's what we're in the market of. It's how do we think? And I know music is there in all sorts of ways for different people at different points in their lives and so on. But sometimes music has to be uncomfortable. And I was talking to a friend about Shostakovich, who didn't know his music so well. And they were saying it's sort of edgy and uncomfortable. I said, yes, of course it is. It's meant to be difficult. It's meant to put you on edge and for you to sort of be moved and transported by it. That's part of what music can do. Obviously, other music can be very soothing as well. But that piece was, it'll be very a very important moment when we get back to it. And I'm sure others like it.